Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Maddie.
Michael, yes.
Yeah, you know I got arrested today.
You got a what?
I got arrested.
You got arrested?
Yeah, for carrying these two guns.
And you're kissing your bicep.
Yeah, just joking. But you happen to know where the vet is?
I was at the vet yesterday.
I want to know where the vet is because these two pythons are sick.
And again, he's kissing his bicep.
No, just joking. But you know I can't wear a jacket, right? Because if I do, I'll be charged for carrying concealed weapons. No, just joking. You know that they thought I robbed a dairy farm? Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Dr. Matt and Dr. Mike's medical podcast. Muscles today. That's why I was kissing.
Oh, that explains
kissing
it.
Kissing my biceps and trying to kiss my calves.
Disturbed.
Kiss my baby cows. Hey, Ben.
I've been well.
What's new? Who cares? So, let's do. Muscles. You ready? This is going to be one of two because today we're going to look at the overview of muscles and the anatomy of muscles.
So this is the start of a new system.
Start of a new system.
Do you need to do any groundkeeping before you start? Or housekeeping, should I say?
Groundkeeping, housekeeping.
Doesn't really matter.
I live in a house. You live out in an open field.
In the ground, yeah.
In the ground. Like a rabbit. You live in a warren.
That was my nickname at school.
The rabbit or warren?
Queensland, it's illegal to have rabbits.
True.
Unless you're a magician.
Is that true?
Apparently. I looked it up because I wanted to get rabbits to cut my grass. But apparently you can't. You need to be either a magician or for science purposes.
Wow. We're scientists.
That's true.
But you probably can't take it home. Mm. So, do some groundkeeping.
Let's do some groundkeeping.
We are available on Twitter individually. I'm at Mikey
Todd.
Todd. MikeyKey.
Okay.
TOD.
Yep.
And Matt is at Dr. Bartox at DrBartox. So you can contact us there. Or we've got the actual podcast Twitter page, which is at GU Biosciences. You can contact us on Facebook. Just type in Dr. Matt and Dr. Mike's Medical Podcast. We've got Instagram as well. Just have a look. And you can also send us an email, GUBiosciences@gmail.com. Let's begin with muscles. Shall we do an overview of muscles? Okay. I've obviously got heaps of them. That's the first point. For some reason, Matt's just taking his socks off. What are you doing?
I wanted to show you my muscles at the end of my feet.
What muscles would they be?
No, I just noticed my socks was inside out.
Cool. Glad you did it while we're doing a podcast. All right. Well, while Matt puts his socks on, because he's got the world's worst timing,
done.
We're going to go through the muscular system. And let's do a quick overview definition. Why do we have muscles? Why do I have heaps? Why do you not have many?
I've got the same number as you.
What number? How many muscles are there in the body? You want to know how many there are? Are we adding up? Okay, how many different types of muscles are there?
By types.
Good point. How many different major categories of muscles?
This is not getting easier.
Okay.
Three.
Okay. What are the three muscle types?
Skeletal.
Yeah.
Cardiac.
Yep.
And smooth.
Okay. I don't know how, if you were to add them all together, I don't know how many there are in the body, but I know that there's about 660 skeletal muscles in the body. And these are the muscles that are attached to our skeleton, hence skeletal muscle, for conscious movement. Not always conscious movement, but for volition and movement. Right?
Yeah. I think most of them you'd have conscious control over, to a degree. Like you could least, right?
Yeah, it's true. Like, so blinking, for example, most of the time we don't do that consciously, but we can.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing.
And breathing.
Esophagus.
Swallowing.
Yeah.
Well, you again, generally initiate your swallow.
Yeah, but the first third of the esophagus is skeletal muscle, right?
So that's what I mean. You initiate that part, but the rest you don't.
All right. Anyway, why do we have them? Why do we have muscles?
Let's start at the beginning. Okay. Oh, hey, it's a good question. Why do we have muscles?
Yep.
All right. So they're generally considered... No, I shouldn't say that. They do a number of things. So if you look at a whole range of animals, probably most people would say the muscles in these animals, functional-wise, is to move things.
Yeah.
Move stuff.
Yep.
Would you agree?
Yeah. What type of stuff?
Stuff could be the animal itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they would generally be considered moving the skeleton or the cartilage, okay? Or it might be to move viscera.
Yeah.
Or stuff in the viscera.
So organ-based stuff.
Yeah, and then there'll be blood-based movement, which would be probably more cardiac, so heart.
You pretty much summarized skeletal, smooth, and cardiac there.
And that's just in movement, though. So, yeah. But there are other things that muscles do other than movement as a purpose.
Well, that's important because, let me just say that, most cells or many cells in the body actually have cytoskeletal components that allow them to be able to move in one way or another. So there are cells that can form, there are cells that can move around and they're not muscle-based cells. So, for example, these cytoskeletal, cyto means cells, skeletal just means structure or architecture. So there's things within cells that allow cells to shorten and lengthen, right, at will, for lack of a better term, which allows the cell
towards a guy called Will.
Towards a guy called William. That allows for these cells to have some sort of locomotion, so movement,
okay,
but also have phagocytic activity. So that means to eat, so to engulf something that's around it, and also for mitosis. So this is when a cell splits to make more copies of itself. So all these things involve movement and involve cytoskeletal structures that allow it to move. Hence, movement for muscle isn't its sole definition.
Okay.
That was my whole point, is that you can't just stop at muscle's definition of movement.
So, but isn't it right to say that muscles is more of a tissue than a cell?
Absolutely, so but every tissue is made up of cells, and it's the cell that shortens and lengthens.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that even though muscle cells shorten and lengthen for movement to occur, there are other cells that also shorten and lengthen that aren't called muscle cells.
Okay.
Because it happens differently. So the way that these other cells do it is by something called polymerization and depolymerization events. Right. So this is where, think about like Lego blocks, right? Polymerization is getting one Lego block and clicking on more on top of it, making it longer, right? Yeah. Depolymerization is just unclicking the Lego blocks. That's how these cells move around or change their shape, is by getting these cytoskeletal structures and doing that. Muscle doesn't do that, right?
Right.
Muscle slides across each other, which we'll talk about later on.
Yep, okay. But you would define muscle in terms of its function as just lengthening and shortening, right? Really?
Yeah, the muscle cells. Yes, but the muscle as a tissue performs many roles.
Yeah, but essentially what comes out of their role is still based on them just getting longer and shorter.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's pretty basic when you break it down, that all they do is just get short and long, short and long, short and long. But what they actually then do to the body could be they might move things, like you already said.
Yeah.
But they could do other things, like...
I don't know.
Here are the other things.
Don't know. Like what?
Well, a big one is it will keep your temperature regulated, so that kind of fits into last week's stuff on homeostasis.
How?
Well, if you move your muscle, it generates skeletal muscle.
Okay.
It generates heat as a byproduct. Is that true by saying that?
Some people would say no, but I say absolutely. Okay. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, I know one person would say no, but I'd say definitely.
We went to a talk recently, and it was just stated that there's the energy output of a cell, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's basically just...
So, remember, energy outputs via the mitochondria.
Yeah. Yep. So, glucose and oxygen in, and all that goes out is ATP and CO2, really. But with
water.
No other kind of energy.
Water.
But there's no... But in this sense, we kind of, as in we, Michael and I, are in the consensus that there'll be other energy given off, which would be, for instance, in muscle contraction, heat. And you could see that. So, when you are exercising, again, Michael is the athlete here, so correct me if I'm wrong, Michael.
Yeah.
But one of the limiting factors of an athlete in their performance is keeping at a good temperature.
That is absolutely a rate limiting factor.
If you can keep at a physiological temperature for a longer period, you probably will compete very well in that event.
So why do you reckon that's the case?
Well, I guess if you start overheating...
Now, you're talking about internal body temperature, obviously.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so, if you can keep your body temperature at a nice, stable 37 degrees while you're running a marathon or doing a triathlon, your whole efficiency of your body is going to be higher. And so, as soon as you start to get hotter and hotter, your efficiency will start to drop.
And this is because...
Probably all your proteins and channels and...
But you know there are... heat shock proteins.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Right? And these heat shock proteins tend to get activated in times of internal increased body temperature.
Right.
And they can actually have... Some can actually have some beneficial effects in regards to just trying to maintain health.
Okay.
In that scenario. But you're right. You're right. Because you're going to have overall increased body temperature, and that's also going to relate to result in water loss, ion loss, so forth.
Yeah. And so you become less and less efficient, right?
Mm.
And so this is why some athletes may use cooling vests or I don't know what else they use.
Fans on their hat.
Well, that was just me at the cricket.
Yeah, that's right. Strapping air conditioning units to their back.
Yeah, I'm not sure that would work at all. So temperature regulation is one.
Okay, that's one.
I think that's real. Do you agree with that?
I think so.
Okay,
honestly,
I mean,
if you look at the physics of it, when energy is neither created nor destroyed, but it is transferred, and often energy is lost. So when you go to take glucose with some other products and create energy, you're going to release energy in the form of heat. You're going to.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that. So we all know that if I stood here right now and contracted my bicep 50 times, contract, relax, contract, relax, if you put your hand on my bicep, it would get hot. Now, that's not necessarily because...
More blood flow.
That's right. It's because of the more blood flow. It's not necessarily because of all the heat that's been produced from the bicep, but because more blood needs to go to that area to provide it with nutrients, and blood is what carries the temperature.
So, it could be a bit of both, really. And so, like, if you've got an inflamed area of your body, let's say, going back to last week, you stepped on that nail, and your foot becomes inflamed and infected, it will get hot, which is, again, probably more than just blood flow to the area. It's probably also a lot of cells are
cytokine
really
release.
Hyperactive and needing and burning a lot of energy, right?
But potentially, yeah.
And that's probably why people get hungry and can lose weight when they're sick.
We may be wrong.
Yeah. Happy to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
So, temperature regulation is one. Now, other things that muscles do, now Michael might disagree with this, but apparently, other than heat as an output, muscles can also create noise.
I don't mean
noise and you can audibly hear
my bicep squeak when I pick up a dumbbell.
But certain species, let's say we're jumping into the marine world here.
God, we haven't even started with humans properly.
Yeah, well, you asked me what the function of muscles were. So when you're in the water as a fish... other animals, so let's say predatory animals like sharks or bigger fish, can actually hear, not through their ears, they have special receptors elsewhere in the body, their muscles of fish contracting.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
And this is how sharks and so forth pick up the activity of other fish, you know, when they're maybe injured or they're feeding.
I honestly think that it can't be the sound emanating directly from the muscle contraction. It must be the result of the muscle contracting and making some sort of movement in the water, and this is then creating some sort of sound wave within the water. From movement within the water. Not the sound of the fibers.
I don't know if it's
rubbing against each other like bloody Tin Man from the Wizard of Oz.
There is a movement in there, so in there has to be some kind of
sound emanating.
Yeah. Anyway, if this is less controversial, muscles will also cause an electrical voltage.
That's true.
Okay. And so
they'll only contract if they've been given a particular voltage.
And that comes from your nerves, and then that will change sodium channels and calcium channels in the muscles to then cause that to happen.
So, you know, with skeletal muscle, for every kilogram of skeletal muscle, you release 100 watts of power.
So, that's like a...
light bulb.
Yeah.
Like a decent powered light bulb.
All right. So, with that in mind, so there's certain, again, in the fish, they can utilize this electricity. So, they've got special organs, believe it or not, they've got special organs that they can hold on to that electricity. And then they can zap things with it.
Sounds like an electric eel, mate.
Yeah, exactly. And that's so.
How do they hold on to it?
Oh, they got a special organ that I guess somehow charges, like a battery. I don't know. And then they discharge it when they want to zap something.
Right.
And
how much can they release, voltage wise?
Stop asking these questions. I'm not a marine biologist.
Well, you like to act that you are, though, don't you? I'm just a comparative anatomist.
And there's also animals that will just put an electrical field out in front of them, and then they know when something's come into that field.
Which
would be particularly useful if you're in murky, dark water.
Yeah.
You could pick up things.
Be useful for us.
Coming into your area and they eat them.
It's a great idea.
So basically you're using the muscular system for food, for defense, for navigation, and then for movement.
Nice.
And heat. Like fish will move their eyes to keep warm.
Really? Yeah. It generates that much heat?
Well, a lot of blood vessels in your head.
Even in a fish head? We've got big brains. Fish don't.
Okay.
I'm really challenging you today.
So, I think we've done muscles.
Yep.
Are you happy with the definition?
Yeah, definition was good.
Okay.
I like it.
Let's now move on to muscle types, which we've kind of already done. So, first of all, let's just form the basis that in your body, so we're now into humans, not fish.
Good.
Yeah, Michael's thankful.
That's exactly what everyone wants to hear.
We have four types of tissue.
Yeah.
So we've got epithelial tissue, which usually covers things.
Yep.
Or lightens the outside of things or inside of organs.
Yeah, we got that.
Yeah. There's connective tissue that puts everything together.
Yep.
And then there's nervous tissue, which we've already spoke about.
Communication.
And then the fourth type is muscle.
Movement.
And so this moves it. No, not only movement. This moves us on to muscular tissue.
Okay, and so the types.
Within muscular tissue, there now are three different types.
Okay, which one do you want to start at?
You take over.
Okay, let's start at... Okay, let's finish with skeletal muscle because that's going to be the main one we focus on. Let's start with smooth muscle. All right, firstly, where will you find smooth muscle?
Well, smooth muscle generally is considered... It will move viscera.
Viscera meaning?
So, wherever you have viscera, you will have smooth muscle.
So, organs.
Yeah.
Okay. And so...
So, an example would be lungs.
Lungs.
Or at least bronchioles.
Yeah.
Not the tubes on the way down to the lungs anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the diaphragm, that's skeletal muscle.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Yep.
That big long tube from your mouth to your anus.
What tube's that?
Which is your gut tube.
Oh, yeah.
That is all... lined with smooth muscle.
Yep.
All your blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not the capillaries, but, you know, the arteries, arterioles.
So, would it be fair to say that smooth muscle moves your internal milieu?
Yes, very good.
Moves your internal milieu. I like the word milieu.
Who is that?
Milieu.
Some milieu. French person?
Yeah. No, it's not a person. It's a term.
Okay.
Stuff.
Environment?
Yeah.
Internal, well, depends how you define.
Well, it moves your blood. It moves your fecal material. It moves your food. It moves your urine. It moves not air, but it helps facilitate the quantity of air coming in and out of your lungs. So, yeah, the internal milieu.
Sure.
You're right with that? All right. That's what it does. That's what smooth muscle does. Should we talk about how it looks? I think so.
It's smooth.
Well, okay. All right. No, that's a good point. Okay. All right. So, smooth muscle does look smooth under a microscope, and you compare this to the other two types, which is cardiac and skeletal. They don't look smooth. There's this term called striated. And striated just means banded, striped, right? Now, the reason they look striped is because if you go inside each of the cells of these muscle tissues, cardiac and skeletal, there's actually subunits or components that cross-link over. So they're like little plates stacked on top of each other, and they form definitive bands, right? And it's these plates that slide across each other that result in the contraction. Now, they're not really plates. They're more like tubes, right? But they're all stacked on top of each other. Now, skeletal muscle and cardiac muscle have these in a particular way, and they're visible, and you can see it, and that, hence they're called striated. Smooth muscle, they don't have that.
They're more like...
They contract in a different way.
Like a drawstring bag.
That's a great way of putting it. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, like the old school drawstring bag where you pull...
That's how I hold all my coins and pogs. You remember pogs?
You pull the top end of the drawstring and it closes the aperture and brings the bag together, doesn't it?
The aperture.
And so anything
bag.
Inside it gets squeezed.
Yeah.
So if you had a balloon inside it and you pulled it together, it would start to squash the balloon.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the basis of how smooth muscle works.
I like that. So there's no definite bands or striations or stripes or anything like that. In addition to that, its shape is spindle shaped.
Which is what?
It looks like an eye. You know how an eye is tapered on both ends? Yep. So that's what it looks
as
like.
As in an eye, like what's in your, what you see with.
Yeah, not the letter I. Yeah, but like, yeah, that's right. And another important feature is that it is uninucleated. What does that mean?
Uni's one.
Yeah. So it has one nucleus per cell. Which means there's just one, each cell has a single nucleus which contains its genetic material.
Brilliant.
Last thing is that this muscle contracts involuntarily.
So you have no control over.
That's right. And think about it, that's pretty important. It's good that we have no control over the urine traveling from our kidneys down into
be careful.
Ureters to our bladder and
maybe from
and urethra.
Bladder, at least.
I mean, we
do want to have final control
of the sphincters, but we don't contract the muscle through our urethra and actively push it through.
No, that's true. But you do want to have some control of your bladder.
Very true.
Otherwise, you'd be wetting yourself.
Same with digestive system, right? You've got a level degree of control there, but again, you've got control of the sphincters there. Or at least the external sphincter, not the internal sphincter. That's right. That's involuntary. So there was a lack of voluntary use there. And this muscle, again, from, like you said, from the lower two thirds of the esophagus all the way down to the rectum and the anus, is smooth muscle and it contracts.
Thirds. You put your rectum in thirds.
Excuse me?
Yeah. Just like your esophagus, it goes in thirds. So the distal one third of your esophagus, you have control over.
And same, no. The proximal one third of your esophagus you have control over, and the distal one third of your rectum you have control over.
Yeah, that's what I said, didn't I?
You said esophagus.
Did I?
Yeah.
How do I get those two pipes mixed up?
I don't know. But it all contracts involuntarily. And think about, how does it do it? It does it as though you've got a stocking. You put a tennis ball in that stocking, and you need to get that tennis ball from one end to the other. You'll squeeze your hand around it and continue to move. So it's this patterned, like wave-like motion called peristalsis. That's how
that's in the GRT, right?
That's in the GRT.
What
that's
about
how
elsewhere?
The smooth muscles contract.
I guess it's peristalsis in the kidneys,
yeah.
Or from the kidneys down to the bladder.
Yeah,
that would be the same. And
what
that's
about
why
blood
people
vessels?
Get. That's why people get really bad pain when there's stones in there.
Because that's right. The wave-like patterns contract around the stone, and this stretches the stretch receptors in the smooth muscle, which results in pain. Now that's actually an important point, because when it, you look at the GIT and the urinary tract, a lot of the pain receptors are elicited due to stretch issues. So a lot of the time, if you've got some sort of cut or incision or whatever to the GIT viscera, for example, may not necessarily be felt as severely
or at all,
or at all, compared to gas distending your GIT, resulting in abdominal pain.
Which makes sense, because you don't really need reception in your bowel for touch or for people sticking knives into it.
Yeah, we would never have evolved that.
But you would want to receive signals for an obstruction.
Exactly.
Because it's problematic and you need to deal with it.
Yeah, perfect. Mm. All right, there's
and the same,
that.
And the same goes with the ureters. Got a stone stuck there. Mm. It's highly painful.
Yeah, I heard it's, you know, what do they, what do men say? It's the male equivalent of giving birth. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know why they say that. I think...
Because males have nothing else to hold on to. Pun.
I think a lot of people think that the painful part of passing a stone is getting it from the bladder out through the penis.
That's the easiest part.
But yeah, I think
it's
in
the
most
thickest
cases,
tube. You wouldn't widest
even,
tube.
You wouldn't even feel it. That part. It would just pass through that part without even knowing.
Depending on the size of the stone.
That'd be a big stone to feel it. Kind of that bit,
even a grain of sand would be felt.
Nah.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I think
I'm
so.
I'm debating against that.
Okay. I think you definitely people, feel a grain of sand in the ureter.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will pass stones from the bladder out to the toilet without even knowing. So,
true.
They'd either have to look in the toilet or pee through a strainer.
Happy, we're happy with smooth muscle?
Smooth muscle done. Now, cardiac. So, cardiac is...
Let's go through the same points then. Cardiac is a function. Matty.
It moves... It's in your heart muscle. So, it's your heart muscle, essentially, cardiac muscle.
So, it's in the heart muscle. It is the heart muscle.
It is. Collectively, it is the heart muscle.
All right.
So, all your cardiac muscles put together will give you the myocardium of your heart, which is...
What's myo mean?
I'd be guessing this. 90% of the volume of your heart, would you say?
Is
so
myocardium.
So, you pulled your heart out...
Metaphorically or literally?
Literally.
Literally.
Yeah.
Like a Temple of Doom, Indiana Jones.
No, the guy off Dumb and Dumber. Now, how he had a fight with that kung fu in the restaurant.
Yeah, you do know that that was a copy of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. That's what they did it.
Oh, very good.
He reaches in and pulls it out dun, 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 in his hand.
So, if you look at the heart in volume or mass, I'd be. This is just a guess. I'd say at least 90% of it would be
at least
muscle.
I'd say 95%.
Yeah,
and that's a guess too. So we're both probably wrong.
I haven't quantified this, but that's yeah. So that's
And what's it do? What's it do? Yeah. We need to... The prefix myo.
When you hear myo, it just means you're in the land of muscles.
Okay. What about when you hear the prefix sarco?
Skeletal muscles? Is that right?
I think it means flesh. Like, specifically means flesh. But but basically, myo and sarco are prefixes, meaning they go at the front of words, that tell you that we're referring to muscle.
But I think sarco's... Specifically skeletal muscles, isn't it?
I can't think of a time when I'd use it in something that's not skeletal muscle.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we often refer to the sarcoplasm, which is the cytoplasm, the sarcolemma, which is this cell membrane.
Or sarcoplasmic reticulum.
That's right, which is the endoplasmic reticulum. Yep. We'll talk about that later on. All right, so...
Not today, though.
What does the heart... Okay, obviously the heart muscle, when it contracts, it pushes blood around. That's its basic function.
Well, out of the heart.
Yeah, but around as well. Like around the heart.
Yeah, I guess it gives the blood pressure in the body generally.
Now, the cells itself, I said that smooth muscle was spindle shaped, so like an eye. Heart muscle is branched.
Yeah, like a tree.
Like a tree branch. So you can see it's got the main part of it and then little branches coming off. Mm. Now, that means that it's connected to other cells.
Other branches.
Through other branches. Mm. And they're held together by connections called intercalated discs. And this holds one cell to another cell. And doesn't just hold it together, but allows communication between one cell and another.
Which is very important.
So why is it important for the heart that one cell can speak to the next cell, which can speak to the next cell?
Well, what's one of the main... What is the purpose of the heart, really?
Well, the heart contracts as a whole thing, right?
So it's... You would say that its main function, what it needs to do well, is to pump.
It needs to pump, yeah, true.
And so, unlike a mechanical pump, water pump, that's done by machinery, this is done by a muscle. And so, to get that fluid out of it, it has to coordinate the contraction. So, just like you said with your stocking analogy, you've got to make sure you push it from one end and keep pushing it just behind that bolus of fluid. So, it ejects the fluid out of the heart efficiently.
So, the reason why all these branched cardiac muscles are linked together is that when one cell gets stimulated to contract, the next cell gets stimulated and the next cell, and it's a domino effect of contraction. Now, this is called a syncytium. When one cell, so what a syncytium is when an entire collection of cells act as though it's a single cell. So when a tissue acts as though it's basically one cell, meaning when one cell contracts, the whole tissue contracts, that's a syncytium. And that's what the heart is.
Yep.
It's uni and so, sometimes multi.
So if it doesn't do that well, that's moving to a disease or disorder called dysrhythmia, which can be subtle or fatal.
That's true, because
a long continuum.
So if
you have too much caffeine, so this is the problem with these big energy drinks like Mothers or Red Bull.
We don't need to name them.
No, I have to, because this is a health promotion.
No,
as
it's
well,
not,
Michael.
No, it's not.
Particularly for young children, they shouldn't be consuming this huge amounts of caffeine. But anyway,
the sugar too is pretty.
If you were
pretty
the
horrific.
The caffeine is. It's an antagonist for adenosine.
Yeah, adenosine.
And that changes some of the electrical properties, particularly in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that can cause a dysrhythmia, most notably atrial fibrillation. And when you have a heart that's fibrillating, it's kind of like, you know, you've got a bowl of jelly and you just shake it.
Mm.
That's kind of what the atria are doing.
I like to call it a bag of worms.
Or you can... All right. Either way, it's what it's illustrating is that efficiency of ejection. Now, in terms of the atria, it's probably slightly less than if the ventricles are doing it.
What do you mean?
Less. what's the word? Not say
problematic.
Vital. Sure, problematic. It's still problematic, but it's probably not going to be as immediate as if your ventricles went into fibrillation. Because if your ventricles went into fibrillation, like the bowl of jelly or the bag of worms, you would probably faint pretty quickly, and it's an emergency. So this
now what that means is that the cells aren't acting like a syncytium. It means the cells are basically groups of cells within that tissue are contracting independently of one another.
Yeah,
that's what it's referring to.
So no blood's moving.
Yeah.
And so a VF...
Ventricular fib.
Yep. A VF rhythm is a medical emergency, and that's a
tooth sore rhythm.
That's a shockable rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whereas AF, you know, you potentially could live with it for long periods of time. But that's, again, just illustrating that when the heart's not contracting in unison because these cells aren't communicating well with the next cell,
That's a good point, because when you defibrillate someone, they're in fibrillation. Predominantly V-fib, so ventricular fibrillation, because again, if the ventricle's acting like a bag of worms, there's not one nice big strong contraction that's pushing the blood out.
Mm.
So the blood pools and it doesn't get delivered to the body. So you defibrillate, meaning you send a big strong charge throughout all of the cells and get them to start again at the same time. That's the whole intention behind it, right, Matt?
That's right.
Is that you'll send one shock through all of them and they all reset. Because for some reason they're all doing it in independently of one another.
And while we're there, just to make sure we clear it, is that you would never shock a flat line. So when you always see in the movies where they've got a flat line, nothing's happening in the heart. Heart's not doing anything at all. You can't shock it because it's not going to do anything.
You've got to
CPR it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We haven't moved on yet because we need to talk about
These are intercalated discs. What they do is they hold each cells together, so when they contract, they don't rip apart, as well as they have special gap junctions which allow ions to move through into
basically
the next cell,
electrical signal.
And that allows them, as you said, to contract in unison.
Okay, and again, it's involuntary. You don't consciously think, contract, relax, contract, relax, contract, Christ for that, because it would be quite bothersome if we had to tell our heart to consciously contract each time. Skeletal muscle. We're here. Moving on to skeletal muscle.
Was there anything else you want to say? But cardiac is striated, though. It does have those stripes.
It is striated. It is uninuclear, sometimes binuclear, meaning it has one to a couple more nuclei. But skeletal muscle, it's shaped like a cylinder, right?
Like a big long tube.
Like a big long tube, and it sits sort of parallel with all the other big long tubes.
Kind of together they are in another big tube.
That's right.
And I guess it depends on the whole.
It's like
shape.
Muscle inception. So you got one tube, which is a single muscle cell, which is also known as a muscle fiber.
Yep.
And then these fibers are bundled together with other muscle fibers.
You'll see this
called a fascicle, right?
You'll see this if you eat chicken. So if you consume chicken, most notably, when you pull the breast part apart, usually the breast part, you'll see all these fibers kind of rip apart. So they're the muscle fibers. So they're kind of individual, kind of probably more than one, but they're the cells of the pectoralis major of the chicken.
There you go. And so these cells.
Is that fair by saying?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So these muscle fibers or muscle cells, they're quite big, right? They're quite big cells. They're multinucleated tube-like cells.
Actually, can I ask you a question here?
Go for it.
This came to me the other day.
Yeah.
You know how a couple of weeks ago you said what's the biggest cell in your body versus what's the smallest? Could you be right by saying, because it just came to me when I was driving, that you can have one cell, like a neuron cell, that could go from your toe all the way up into your...
You're probably right there.
Effectively, I know it's very thin,
and
you probably wouldn't be able to see it
naked
eye, unlike oocyte. But collectively in volume, surely that would be bigger. Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, I mean, muscle cells are big. Yeah, muscle cells.
Again, you probably can't see them with the eye, but they're big in length. So if you look at the longest muscle, which I think is the gracilis. That's my guess.
So they're between 10 to 100 microns in diameter and can be centimeters long.
Yeah, I know, but you still wouldn't be able to see them a naked eye, right?
Well, not if they're 10 to 100 micrometers. So a millimeter, everyone can picture a millimeter in their head, one-tenth of a centimeter, right? That's a millimeter. 10 to 100, 1/10 to 1/100th of a millimeter. Is the diameter of a muscle fiber.
Okay.
So that's pretty small, right?
But they're long.
But they can be centimeters long.
Yeah. Or more. Half a meter. I mean, not quite.
Well,
it depends on the person, I guess.
But many centimeters long, you could say. So that's skeletal muscle. It contracts consciously, but is also bound up to our skeletal system.
Yeah, which could be both cartilage and bones.
True. How does the muscle connect to the skeletal system?
Tendons, usually.
Okay. So, it's tendons that hold muscle to bone.
Yeah.
What is it that holds muscle to muscle?
An aponeurosis, maybe?
An aponeurosis? What?
Which is still a tendon. It's just a flat tendon.
Then what's a ligament, then?
A ligament's
bone. Bone to bone?
Yeah.
Okay. So, ligament is bone to bone. Tendons... are muscles to bone, and an aponeuroses are often found at the ends of bones, at the ends of muscles, as a connective tissue. May not necessarily hold it to the bone, but it may do. Like you can see an aponeuroses on your stomach, on your abdominals, and that's just between the abdominal separations, right?
Or the ones between the muscle on your forehead. So when you crinkle your forehead, that's called the frontalis.
Yeah.
And onto the back, where you can kind of somewhat crinkle your scalp at the back.
Yeah, you see the baldies.
That is one muscle. But in the top of your crown is the aponeurosis.
And it's just this white sheet-like collagenous, you know, filled with collagen, hence it being very white.
Yeah, I think it's a tendon, really. I think it's just a flat tendon.
It is a flat tendon. Yeah, it is a flat tendon, but tendons are filled with collagen.
Okay, yep.
And they're white, telling you they're avascular, which means, you know, you tear a muscle, it fixes very quickly. You tear a tendon, fixes very slowly. And a lot of this has to do, a couple of reasons, but one of which has to do with the blood supply.
Yep.
Tendons are very poor in regards to the blood supply. Hence why, if you end up tearing a tendon, it takes a lot longer to fix.
But they're still better than ligaments.
Absolutely, because that's bone to bone.
And then cartilage.
And cartilage even more so. You can tear cartilage. It's difficult to do so, but you can. And they take a long time to fix. But that's one of the great things about skeletal muscle is it has this ability to regenerate and respond to acute or even chronic injury.
Yep.
And that's what's so one of the things that's so spectacular about it. The way that this muscle works is by shortening, right?
Yeah.
So what about a muscle of our arm, right? So the bicep, right? You're an anatomist. Where's the bicep muscle? So bicep means two heads, right?
Two heads.
So there's two muscles here.
So the bicep, there's two biceps in your upper arm.
Where are they attached?
But the one bicep brachii.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The bicep brachii having two heads. So you're going to have one that kind of, the long head goes right into your shoulder joint.
Okay.
And kind of goes around where the humerus actually attaches to the scapula.
Cool. All right.
And the other one goes to your scapula at a place called the coracoid process.
Yep. Okay. So that's its connection proximally. Where's its distal connection?
So it's actually got two. It's got an aponeurosis, which will go down kind of onto the ulna, I believe. And the other one will
So that's the elbow. But that's the bone that's connected to the elbow.
Inside of the elbow.
Yep.
The kind of that area where they take blood. You know, that hollow point.
Yep. Yeah.
And the other one goes to the radius.
Okay, great point. So,
and the important point. Well, I'm getting too much into functional anatomy now, so I might stop.
No. Well, my point about highlighting this is that this muscle is connected at the shoulder, basically, and at the forearm, and it sits on the pretty much there on the humerus.
Yep.
Right on the upper arm. Why? Because when you contract that muscle, you shorten it. And what inevitably happens is you're bringing the forearm closer to the shoulder.
Hmm.
Now, skeletal muscle can only contract a maximum of 30% of its full length.
Okay.
Right? So, once you've contracted that skeletal muscle 30% of its full length, if you want to contract or move even more, you need to use the leverage system of your skeletal system. Right?
Okay.
So, that's why these muscles are attached to lever points. So, the muscle may want to move something, and that's fine, but only can move something 30% of its length. You want to move it even further, attach that muscle to bone that's at hinge points, such as where the elbow is and at the shoulder, and you get far greater range of movement. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, it's basically the muscular system piggybacking on the skeletal system is what we call the musculoskeletal system, and is what generally we refer to as giving us free range movement.
Okay. And when you look at the muscle, you got your origin insertion, which you mentioned.
Yeah. So the origin at this point, what does that refer to as opposed to the insertion?
That's the place that's fixed. It generally won't move.
Gotcha. And usually proximal? Is that usually closest to the trunk?
I don't know if there is.
Sure.
Maybe. I've never really thought about it.
But so, How do you know which one's the origin and which one's the insertion?
Well, just by the one that if you move that muscle, the origin doesn't move, but the insertion will move.
So, for the bicep, the attachment at the connection at the
shoulder
is the insertion. That's the origin.
That's fixed, yeah.
Yep. And the insertion is down there at the ulna and radius.
And so you get most of the movement at the elbow joint.
Yep.
But because it crosses the shoulder joint, you, technically speaking, you might be able to get a bit of shoulder flexion with your bicep as well.
Mm. Yeah. Perfect.
And then because it's inserted on two bones, now you'll see this because you're much more of a gym person than I am, Michael.
Yes, I do look better than you.
But you'll see...
Is that what you said?
Basically.
Okay.
But you'll see at the gym with the bicep... because it's...
You say bicep?
Bicep. Because you're attached, inserted in the radius, is the one that radiates or moves your palm, helps move your palm. How you do it? Face down, face up, face down, face up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So pronation, supination.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so if you are pronated...
Yeah,
so
which means palm down.
Palm down, and you try and do a bicep curl...
Yeah.
You deactivate a lot of the bicep brachii.
So why is that?
because of the way it's inserted.
Gotcha.
So you'll see a lot of people at the gym, they'll start with a dumbbell curl,
yeah,
pronated, but they'll flex whilst they're supinated.
Yep, and why would they do that?
That gives them a greater degree of the muscles then activated.
Wow, there you go. That's interesting. I like that. Whereas, I'm going to have to use that in the gym.
Whereas if you just do a bicep curl completely pronated, which you will see some people do.
Completely pronated?
Completely pronated.
Yeah.
Particularly on a bar.
A little T-Rex. Yeah, I've seen that.
It's working the muscle more so underneath it, called the brachialis.
Gotcha. Nice. I like that. So, is there any...
So, since we're on that, there's a few things we should just talk about. You have the muscles that are moving things, and they're called the agonist.
Yeah.
So, we'll stay on the bicep. Yeah. Yep. So, when you are moving your palm, let's say how we describe this to the listeners.
Okay.
So, you got your right hand stretched out.
Yeah.
Palm
facing up.
Palm facing up, and your arm's pretty much straight.
Like you're about to do an arm curl.
Straight at the elbow.
Okay? Yep.
Now, if you bring your palm up towards your shoulder...
Like you are doing an arm curl, yeah.
Yeah, all the way up. Okay. The muscle that primarily does that is your bicep.
Yeah.
Again, Michael's kissing.
Canelba.
His, not mine. So, that's called... So, the bicep at this point is called the agonist. Okay?
And why is that? It's agonizing the movement.
Agonizing the movement. Whereas, to do that, logically, you need to turn off the muscle on the other side of the arm. So
the one that extends it.
Extend it. So you need to turn
tricep?
Triceps. Because the triceps is the antagonist.
Okay,
So if they ever, this just goes into more functional anatomy, but if they say, you know, for elbow flexion, okay, the agonist.
That's a bicep curl, is elbow flexion.
Yeah, the agonists are the biceps.
Yep.
The antagonists are the
triceps.
Triceps. Brilliant.
So.
But then you bring in another term, which is called a synergist. And
yep.
That's something that helps, generally will assist the movement or stabilize the joints to allow the movement.
So, is there one for the bicep?
Well, probably you'd have the coracobrachialis and you might have some of the shoulder stabilizing muscles like the rotator cuffs.
Yeah.
Probably would help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever heard of... you know how Michael J. Fox has Parkinson's disease, right? He's also got a disorder where you can have antagonistic muscles contracting at the exact same time. Do you know what that's called?
So, that's not just part of Parkinsonian?
It is. It's part of a Parkinsonian phenotype.
Yeah.
Do you know what it's called?
I don't know the name of it, but I just thought... from the dysfunction of Parkinson's disease, that it's a difficult thing to explain, but one of the functional areas of your brain, called the basal ganglion, which is where all the dopamine cells are, which is the problematic area in Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
Mind you, Michael did a PhD in this, so he's an expert, but I'll just keep talking.
Mm-hmm.
With Parkinsonian disease or syndrome, for you to move a muscle, your basal ganglion, so your part of your brain, has to coordinate activating the flexors of that movement and then turning off the antagonists.
Yeah.
And so, when that is disrupted, it kind of turns them on and off, oscillates between the two. And that's why with Parkinson's disease or Parkinsonian, you'll get them a resting tremor where they shake. Because it's kind of... But when they start moving, it kind of will start to smoothen out.
Which has to do with the dopaminergic feedback in the basal ganglia. Mm. But with Parkinsonian disorders, such as Parkinson's disease and dystonia and so forth, which is often comes together sometimes, such as with what Michael J. Fox has, both dystonia, Parkinsonism, right?
And some people get it with drugs.
And you can get it with drugs, and I can tell you a story in 1 second. With dystonia, you get the contraction, the simultaneous contraction of the agonist and the antagonistic muscles, right? Now, this sort of makes the patient sort of feel like they're being torn apart, and it's this spasmodic sort of contraction known as, you can see it happen of the neck, the muscles of the neck.
Yeah.
It's called torticollis, and it sort of looks like this writhing rhythm. So this writhing movement of the head, because the agonistic and antagonistic muscles are contracting at the
same
time.
That's also more Huntington's, isn't it?
You can get in MS too.
Yeah. So I thought that was the Huntington's
chorea. Yeah. A bit different, but
okay.
This spasmodic torticollis is a sign of dystonia. Agonistic, antagonistic muscles contracting at the same time. And again, it hurts. Think about if you were to contract your bicep and tricep at the same time, where does your arm go? Yeah. Does it go up or down? Does it extend or flex or what? And so it's going to feel like it's been torn. It's going to hurt and your arm's going to writhe. It's going to have that snake-like movement to it.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that's an important point when you're looking at those muscles.
Before we move on to maybe how it develops, there's a few other ways you can classify skeletal muscle. You can classify skeletal muscle based on its color, surprisingly. So within the muscle belly itself, you could have what we call white or red fibers.
Okay.
And that's usually to go with twitch, tonic. So how fast or slow twitch the muscle fibers are.
So type 1 and type 2. Type 1 is slow twitch. Type 2 is fast twitch.
Yeah. And then you have the location.
Okay.
So you can have muscle that is somatic.
So that means body, doesn't it?
Means body or visceral.
So it means organs.
Then you can have whether it's voluntary or not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a good example is the diaphragm. So the diaphragm is technically probably a bit of both. You can control your breathing, but you can't stop it completely.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we also have the embryological origin. So where it's come from, which we can do in a second if you want me to.
Yep. So with the fast twitch, slow twitch. Mm. Slow twitch is type 1, fast twitch is type 2. We'll talk more about it when we look at the physiology of muscle contractions next week. But just so people are aware, the slow twitch muscle fibers, as a general rule...
So they're called tonic fibers?
Yep. Help enable long endurance movement. So distance running.
You're generally born with this complement? You can't really change it too much.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, absolutely. Yeah. And the fast twitch, which is type 2, these muscles fatigue faster, but are used often with these explosive sort of movements like a sprint.
Okay.
So basically, slow twitch, endurance, fast twitch, sprinting.
And whereas with weight and resistance training, you can play around more with your twitch fibers than your slow fibers. So, and you can, my understanding is you can't change between slow and fast or slow and quick.
Well, we'll chat about that next week.
All right. However, with weight training, so when you go to the gym and lift weights, why does your muscles get bigger?
This is actually quite a difficult question to answer, because the general understanding is that muscle damage and muscle tearing needs to occur in order for rebuilding to occur.
When we say tearing, we don't literally mean you tear your muscle in half.
No, they will often refer to it as micro tears, but sort of just sort of like these little micro strains in the tissue.
Right.
Which
will cause
and the thought
a reaction
is,
and inflammation probably.
Yes, and the thought is that in this tissue, particularly skeletal muscle tissue, there are a type of stem cell that sit there called satellite cells.
Okay. Yep.
And the idea is that, and we might talk a bit more about it next week, but just generally here, the idea is that what happens is these satellite cells are activated after injury, they expand, and they recapitulate the differentiation program, which is basically similar to what happens when you're developing skeletal muscle as an embryo. It starts to create new muscle fibers and try and maintain that muscle architecture. Okay. So these satellite cells are sort of wedged between what's called the basement membrane. This is where they quite likely lie. The basement membrane, which is like the bottom of the tissue where it's attached, right? And the sarcolemma, which is the plasma membrane.
Yeah.
So, tissue attached where the cell's attached. So, the basement membrane of the cell where it's usually attached to the plasma membrane. And so, when these tears occur, these satellite cells are activated and increase the amount of myofibers, which is...
So, they're the inner components of the muscle fiber or the muscle cell?
Yes.
Which can... So, basically, if you think about it, if you try to lift, say, 40 kilos doing bicep curls, and you can't, or you just do one or two, and you start doing micro tears, the logical thing that your body wants to do is to make more protein strings to be able to pull on to make you to lift more weights.
The general consensus is you don't create new muscle cells.
They're not cells, so they're fibers.
You just strengthen or hypertrophy, meaning increase the size of the current ones by increasing the fibrils. The fibrils, which is the components of the fibers. You got fibers are the muscle fibers are muscle cells, and inside the muscle cells you have fibrils, which are like tube-like structures.
They're protein strings.
That's right.
And so they're the ones that can shorten and lengthen.
Yeah.
And so let's say you have 100 in each cell. If you add it to 110, you have the capacity to be able to
contract more,
lift more weight. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but by increasing 10% for each cell, that's going to make your muscles get bigger.
And if you have a look inside of a skeletal muscle cell, there is not much room for anything but these fibrils and mitochondria. The nucleus, because it's so packed inside, the nucleus is pushed to the outer edge.
Yeah.
And it's packed.
I'm not sure if we said this, but they're in a muscle cell, skeletal muscle cell, there are multiple nuclei.
Multiple nuclei.
And this probably works off what we're just talking about.
To create new proteins.
You need more nuclei is not only important for holding your DNA and so forth, but it's important to make new proteins. And the proteins, in this case, you want to make are the contractile proteins.
Actin and myosin, which we'll talk about next week.
All right. But, so we've spoken about weight training on the change in muscles.
Yeah.
But also with aging, you'll get loss of muscle fibers. And so they say by about 50, the age of 50, you've lost about 10%.
So start taking testosterone enhancement therapy. That's a joke.
But you counteract that by resistance training and just active.
They actually say that there's a huge amount of research, they being researchers, say that there's a huge benefit in even just beginning a weight training program in your 50s and 60s.
Hmm.
Huge benefit to maintaining muscle strength and mass and health, obviously.
Yep.
Now, so...
And I think just with the aging, I think they lose the fast twitch quicker than the slow twitch.
Maybe. Not sure. I'll look into that. Now,
so we've done.
I'm thinking about
types.
I'm thinking about embryology, and no one
you
else
never
is. I'm thinking about whether we should do it or not. But can we just say in the beginning, right? Which is a good place to start.
Yes, I know we did that last week,
No, it was a week before. But when we create embryonic muscle cells, this is from a cell type called myoblasts, right? So, myo means muscle, blast means to build. So, these are muscle-building cells, and they're derived by a tissue type called mesenchyme. Am I correct, Matthew? I'm correct. And they ultimately fuse, these myoblasts fuse together to form muscle cells. Now, when I say mesenchyme, what do I mean?
From my understanding, it kind of means from the mesoderm, which is the middle germal layer out of the three.
Now, just... so that people are all on the same page, you've mummy and daddy have done the dirty and
I think just loved,
this is way too
loved
early?
Each other in a special way.
Okay, they've loved each other in a special way. That egg has been fertilized.
The biggest cell in the body versus the smallest.
That's right, has been fertilized. As it moves its way through the fallopian tubes towards the uterus, it divides and so forth until it's a marula. The marula then turns into a blastocyst and embeds itself into the uterine wall.
Yep.
By this time, it's what? Between 16 and 30 something odd cells. And it starts to grow and divide. And at what point does this ball of cells have three major cell layers?
3 weeks.
Okay, so at 3 weeks, you've got a visible three layers.
Yeah.
Okay, and... what are the layers going from the... now, is it like a disc of layers or is it a ball of layers?
I think disc
of layers. Okay, so a disc with three layers.
Yeah.
So, like three plates stacked on top of each other?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so the top plate is what?
As in the dorsal, so the back of the embryo. So
okay, so the back of the embryo, which will be ultimately become the back of the embryo. What's that cell layer called?
That's the ectoderm.
Then the middle one?
Mesoderm.
And then the very bottom one?
Endoderm.
Which forms the belly?
It forms your gut tube mostly.
So okay. Now, the mesenchyme comes from the mesoderm, did you say? Yeah. Which is the middle one.
Middle one.
And this forms the connective tissue.
Well, the mesenchyme just kind of, my understanding is the, it's kind of the connective tissue part from the mesoderm.
Yeah.
But with your muscle, so when you're developing, remember going back to the nervous system, we spoke about the neural tube. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
The neural tube closed up, you know, about 21 days.
Okay, so this happens after those three layers.
This comes out of the ectoderm. Yeah.
Which is the top layer, the back.
Right. So that closes up into its own little tube, which gives you the spinal cord and brain.
Yep.
Right on either side of that neural tube is because the neural tube will give you, and the notochord, which is chordates, you know, that's what all vertebrates will have. That's going to be, let's just say that makes your part of your intervertebral disc, so part of your spinal column.
Okay. Okay?
So on either side of that, so right, left side, is a part, this, you have this coalescing of mesenchyme, and that forms.
That's come from the middle layer.
Yep, that's right. Yep. It forms something called a somite.
Okay, so you're saying that we've got those three layers. The very top layer has turned into a tube.
Yeah.
The neurotube, and it sort of pushes itself downwards into the mesoderm.
Yeah.
The mesoderm started to differentiate into mesenchyme, which is
one part of it would. Yeah.
One part would, which is sort of like the connective tissue precursor.
Yeah.
And that starts to wrap itself around the neural tube. Is that what you said? Just go either side of the neural tube.
We just got this big bundles on either side.
Okay.
That, and if you break your body up into sections of your vertebra, so you know how you got C1, C2, C3?
Yeah, so cervical,
Yeah, you have these clumps of mesodermal tissue called somites on either side.
Yeah.
They're going to give you essentially your skin.
Okay.
They're going to give you some bones, and they're going to give your skeletal muscles.
And skeletal muscles.
A big part of skeletal muscles. Yeah.
So the mesoderm,
yep,
turn into mesenchyme, and the mesenchyme turned into...
I think it's best to say it forms into paraxial.
Yep.
So either side, or para means around, doesn't it?
Or away.
Yeah. From the axis.
Yeah.
Which then forms into the somite.
Yeah.
Okay. Somites will then give you a dermatome. Dermatome, you should guess what that's going to make, the dermis.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's going to give you your myotomes, which you already spoke about.
You got that, everyone?
Muscles.
So, to make this simpler, can I just say that the middle layer of the three layers for muscle?
But there's some interesting points to it because in conjunction with embryology and comparative anatomy.
Mm. Now, this is skeletal muscle, you're saying?
Skeletal muscles.
I've read that smooth muscle
actually
comes from the ectoderm. Neuroectoderm.
Which one?
Smooth muscle specifically from the eye. The iris. Comes from the neuroectoderm.
Oh, yeah.
And the esophagus.
I'm not sure about that. It's getting really specific.
Okay. And the esophagus comes from this as well.
Well,
where's the esophagus muscle come from? The musculature of the esophagus, because that's different, right?
Yeah, that comes out of the pharyngeal arch, which helps to form your face.
Which was formed from which layer?
You're probably right by saying it's a big part of it's probably neurocrest.
Yeah, ectoderm.
Which is coming out of ectoderm, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, let's get away from that because people are going, okay, 1 hour's down and they're talking crap I don't want to hear about.
Yeah, but we can maybe finish almost on this. But let's say we're doing embryology in conjunction with comparative anatomy. But if you start off, again, I know I seem to like to go back to this, but when we look at a fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fish is just a body of muscles.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like a cylinder of muscles.
Okay.
Whereas when we look on, once we go on to land, we start to form appendages.
Yeah, right? Appendies.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So arms and legs or wings.
Yeah.
Right?
Would you say a fin is an appendage?
You kind of could, but it doesn't have a huge amount of muscle associated with it.
Okay.
Okay. But, so when you look at the way, so going back to this somite that forms, and we have a dermis layer that goes off and forms around your skin, but then you have two groups of muscles that band off. You have one that goes behind the vertebra.
Yeah.
And one that goes into the body wall.
Okay.
Okay. So the one that goes to the behind the vertebra gives you. So if you think, feel the back of your back on your back.
The back of my back on my back. You know, everyone, feel on the back of your back at your back.
You know those ridges that kind of run in your lower back? You can feel?
No.
They keep your back erect, upright. They're called your erector spinae muscles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so you're saying there's two long strap like lumps that come outwards either side of your spine?
Yeah.
Yeah, mine are really big because I do a lot of deadlifts.
Deadlifts, right. They are probably.
I wish it was bigger.
They're the homologs of what fish. Most of the body of the fish would be.
Yeah.
Okay. But as we've developed limbs and arms, yeah. We've had to shoot a lot more muscles out into our limbs to move them.
Yeah.
Because it's much harder to move the arms and legs and the wings and so forth compared to, say, fins.
Yeah.
In the water.
Okay.
Okay. So you need a heap more muscles than you do in your body. Have I lost everyone?
Maybe a little bit. It's interesting nonetheless. Mm.
And then that gives you all the degrees of nerves that go with it. And then
okay.
When you've got your upper limb and lower limb, that's where you get your brachial plexus and your...
Okay, this is a good point because we haven't spoken about, and maybe it's something for next week, but we've just spoken about the muscle, and the muscle won't just contract by itself. I mean, sometimes it can if you've got an ion imbalance, but the muscle needs to be stimulated to contract.
Mm.
Now, if we're talking about skeletal muscle... Each muscle fiber has its own neuron innervating it.
You have a motor neuron.
Yeah.
Okay, so one motor neuron. So that's one neuron cell that will come down and activate multiple muscle fibers.
That's right. But what I'm saying is that a muscle fiber needs to have some innervation to it in order to tell it to contract. So unlike the heart, where all you need is a neuron going to a single cell and the rest of the cells fire off, the skeletal muscle is not like that. Every single muscle needs its own muscle cell, which is a muscle fiber, needs its own...
Needs to be told to contract.
That's important.
They say that... That's a good point. So when you do go to the gym... or do an activity for the first few times, you are, let's say, fairly weak doing it.
Yeah.
And then maybe you repeat it, let's say, a few times per week. For the first maybe couple of weeks, you do get stronger. And they say that a lot of that is the efficiency of your nerves activating your muscles.
Yeah.
Which is the neuromuscular junction.
Which we'll talk about next week.
Recruitment.
And next week we'll talk about
Botox. And
then
it'll start to grow up, as in the muscles start to get bigger and bigger like we spoke about.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there anything else? I was going to talk about some other things.
What about blood supply?
Well, that's part of the hypertrophy as well.
Mm.
So,
Which is growing of the
growing the muscles. Cell, so, yeah. You need to make more blood vessels. So, your blood... Your muscles are very
Maybe
rich.
It's time to finish. It seems like the words are difficult for you to produce.
My muscles in my pharynx.
Yes.
Tongue and...
Where larynx.
Else? Yeah, obviously the larynx. Yeah,
oh, become paralyzed. So sorry. We're going to talk about... Okay. Next week, or next podcast...
No, end with a few points.
What points?
When we look at how the muscles in humans are different to, say, some other animals...
Oh, like a fish...
Yeah, we could say with the fish. How they've become in the adult form in the human can be done through a number of ways. So, one way is the muscles have migrated from where they once maybe were first... I shouldn't say created, but maybe were their first...
Developed.
Not even developed. In the first instance in an animal, they would have first come about.
So evolutionarily.
So, a good example of that is the diaphragm.
Okay,
the diaphragm... In so other animals would be in the cervical region because the innervation of the diaphragm
in the neck
is the neck, right? But if you look at the diaphragm in humans,
what animal has the diaphragm in its neck?
I don't know.
So you made that up?
No, I didn't.
But there are animals where the diaphragm is in the neck.
Well, coming out of the cervical region
because that's where the nervous innervation comes from.
And so that's an important way of studying how we've come about.
So you're saying
by the nerve innervation.
So, our diaphragm has migrated from the neck down down to the
thoracic
region.
Yeah. So, if in theory, And parts of it do come from the thoracic wall, but the vast majority come from the neck. And
I was going to say, phrenic nerve is...
3, 4, 5.
Yeah, C3, C4, C5 keeps you alive.
Diaphragm alive, yeah.
Keeps diaphragm alive.
So, the changes in some muscles is through migration. Mm. Okay, some muscles have come about through fusion. Okay, so they've just come from separate origins, but they're fused as one.
Do you know any of them?
Yeah, all your abs are an example.
They were separate origins.
Yeah, so if you think about it, so look above the abs and you've got all your intercostals.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So they're the muscles between your ribs.
Yeah.
Right? They all run in a certain direction.
Yeah.
So you've got your internal, we'll go external. You've got your external intercostals, which
run outwards.
If you were to
run up and out.
So they're the ones that if you put your hands into your pockets,
yeah,
that's the direction that they run.
Yeah, so up and out.
Okay. Or, anyway, I can never remember that because it depends which way you're going.
Yeah, if you're putting your hands in your pockets, obviously your hands are going down and in, but the muscle fiber's running up and out.
Okay, all right.
Right?
Yeah, so those particular muscles, so if you were to cut through your skin at your rib level,
yeah,
the first muscle that you would hit is your external intercostals.
Yes.
So they run in that direction. But once you go below your ribs and your abs, you don't have, and Michael's using his intercostals as he's about to sneeze, but you don't have your ribs to keep them separate anymore. Okay, so all your external intercostals in your ab region merges one muscle, which is called your external oblique. Okay.
External oblique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then you go under the external oblique.
Yeah.
And the next logical one is the
internal.
And that's a homologue to the internal intercostal.
Boy.
Make sense? They're fused into one.
Gotcha.
And then the final good one, to use as an example, is your rectus abdominis, which is a six-pack or maybe even the eight-pack.
Thank you.
Which it has kind of kept its separation, and that's why you have these
rectus
bellies.
Means like straight across.
Straight.
Yeah, straight.
Yeah. Make sense?
That makes sense.
And then you have the opposite of fusion, you have splitting. So the pectoralis is a good example. So some animals, it's a big, huge collective muscle, but in humans now, we've got this separated little pectoralis. Well, some people's are bigger than others.
Do you have a favorite muscle? Do you have a muscle that's you think's the most interesting muscle? Ooh. Is there one muscle that you're like, that's... Because obviously you're an anatomist. You would have come across a muscle that you're just thinking, I don't know why it's there, or it does a strange function, or it's connected in a weird way, or anything like that?
I haven't really thought of it like that. Yeah, don't know.
I'm just, I'm having a look here at the human musculature of the muscle system. And, you're looking at skeletal muscles, 660-odd skeletal muscles here, going all the way from the top of the head to the tip of the toes. And you can, you see all the ligaments and tendons and aponeuroses and there's so many in the neck.
Yep. And that's a good point because so when you go back, not quite to the fish, but when you go back to the lower order vertebrates, their body is still connected to their head.
Okay? So is ours.
Yeah, but we start to separate it in the sense that our upper limbs are now disjointed from the head.
And so what does that mean in regards to the neck muscles?
Gives us, for instance, so the trapezius.
Which one's that?
So that's the big triangle muscle in the back.
Gotcha. And it goes up to the...
That's come from your head. Okay. And it's migrated down. And it's brought one of the cranial nerves innervates. Same with the sternocleidomastoid muscle.
Accessory.
Yeah. It's an accessory.
So is that why you can have... Sorry to interrupt. You can have tight traps and it can result in a migraine?
Maybe.
Because if my traps are tight from activity and not stretching it out and rolling it out...
You usually go into a tension headache, don't you?
Tension headache, but I end up getting visual migraines, and it's often from tight traps. So do you reckon it's an accessory nerve issue?
No.
You don't reckon? Or do you reckon it's because of its connection up to the head?
I think it's more likely to be...
So what, the traps are connected up via the aponeuroses of the trapezius?
Yeah, all the way up to the...
All the way up to the occipital frontalis.
Yeah. And then you have the trigeminal nerve that will come in to the back kind of supply that sensory, and I think trigeminal is the main pain receiving nerve to your head.
So interesting. So
you have trigeminal neuralgia and stuff, which causes a lot of problems.
So can you have a trapezius pain in the trapezius that leads to trigeminal pain?
Don't know. Actually, I don't know if the trigeminal goes all the way around there.
Just trying to think. Would it? It goes up to the temple.
It goes forward.
Yeah.
It's more at the face, but a bit will come around. But then I think the dermatomes is more C1, 2, and so forth. I forget that.
All right.
Anyway, I think we should leave it there.
We should leave it there. There's so much we can talk about with the muscular system. But
the big part of the muscular system, and if this goes to the students out there listening who are studying that, it's a very good way to study it. It's not just to memorize the muscles on their own with the nerves and so forth, but understand kind of not only the embryology, but where they've come from, what are their functions, because that will put it into a much better context and then you don't have to just rote learn everything.
660 skeletal muscles.
That's right.
All right, Matt.
With origin, insertion, blood supply, nerve supply.
We didn't even talk about, you know,
tedious
pennate muscles and how it can fan out and multiple fan outs, a single, you know, unipennate, bipennate, multipennate, all that type of
and
stuff.
All the shapes. So you said trapezius, you got rhomboids.
Yeah, rhomboids. What's rhomboid mean?
Rhombus.
Which means, what shape is that?
They're like a flat square.
Yeah, like that's it. It's like a tilted square, right?
Mm.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, next podcast, we're going to go through function.
So that means physiology.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about how muscle contracts, focusing on skeletal muscle, how the nerve innervates the muscle to contract, what role sodium and calcium play in this process, and also clinically, we're going to talk about Botox, which is, you know, similar to botulism. We're also going to talk about myasthenia gravis, if you've ever heard of that before. And we'll also talk about these two big calves I've got.
Believe it or not, he's kissing his calves.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.